Thank you for joining us today for our Lunch with Lou conference call. My name is Jimmy Bassett, and I'm a financial advisor here at AltVest. Today, our CEO, Lou AltVest, will be discussing the economic outlook and a few other items. In just a moment, Lou will join us on the call. After Lou's remarks, I will ask him a few selected questions our clients have submitted. Now, it's my pleasure to present Lou AltVest.
Thanks, Jimmy. Welcome to Lunch with Lou. As has been said, this has been a great year for the markets, and it's nice that we outperformed as well. We also have emailed to you New Year goals. I think we did that last week. When you have a chance, if you haven't read them already, if you haven't read the memo, then just take a look at it. I think you'll find it interesting. Let's move on to the topics at hand. We're going to talk about where we are in the market. Is it about to fall over? Is it going to reach new heights? What about Trump's tax plan? And what's the effect on New York State as a state and on real estate in New York State? The role of interest rates. We're going to find that the role of interest rates are going to be very important. That will be an underlying theme, so pay attention to that. Then we're going to talk about Bitcoin. Is it a new future thing or a flash in the pan? We're going to get headline stuff on Bitcoin since there's been a big change this morning in the price of Bitcoin, and we're going to have a guest speaker, Mayukh Poddar, of our firm, who will bring you up to date on Bitcoin. And we'll talk about the economy, the investment markets, performance figures, investment actions taken last year, actions planned to be taken this year, and we're going to answer your questions. And as a special feature, I'm going to slip in some music. I have an ulterior motive. Get ready. Listen for it at the end of the broadcast. So let's start. Let's start with the economy. The economy picked up momentum in the second half of last year. Consumer spending was robust, especially around the holidays. Holidays were terrific for all those people who were depressed about everything moving to the internet. The non-internet did well as well. Business capital spending moved up in the second half of the year. The dollar for the year declined, and growth in international was very strong. In the new year, 2018, what we see is a step up in consumer purchases along the lines of that late in the year. The tax cut will put more money in household pockets, and there's great optimism. And I'll return to the optimism in just a minute. As I said, business capital spending is strong, very influential. Business capital spending is very influential on the economy and picking up the rate of growth. And business capital spending is reflecting lower tax rates and expectations by business of faster U.S. economic growth. Moreover, there's a better tone for the oil industry. Oil prices are up. International trade is up. As the dollar has declined, the amount of money that corporations are making has moved up, and that's helped them. And the relaxation of regulations by the new administration has had some effect, leading in general to a real feeling of optimism. And it's infectious. I'd like to draw the parallel with the movie. If you go to see a good comedy film, but you're one of the few in the theater because you went during the day, and you hear one person grumbling, all of a sudden the film doesn't have that panache. Take the same film, the theater is packed, people are laughing out loud, and you walk out saying, this is one of the best things I've seen recently. The U.S. economy is in some ways like that. People are not laughing at the theater, but are optimistic about the future and business prospects, and are telling their friends in group settings how optimistic they are. And that has allowed people to spend more. As a matter of fact, the savings rate is down, which isn't, long-term isn't so good. The savings rate has moved below what was a 4 or 5% level. We have to watch that over time. What about the markets? Well, I don't have to tell you. You would have to be Rip Van Winkle to not know how strong the stock market was last year. This year, the outlook has these benefits. A faster rate of economic growth. Last year, a projected 2-3% real GDP. This year, 3-4% or even higher. Possible future decline of the dollar. That is a plus for growth. Further material gain in corporate profits. Inflation is currently low while sales are picking up. A recipe for a good profit gain. Oil price increases are also helpful for the oil sector, which is a key sector of our economy. There are repatriated dollars that are likely to come from abroad. There's incentive for that to happen. The higher corporate inflows available may trigger higher corporate purchases of their shares. Higher corporate purchases of your shares are not a waste for investors because with lower shares, earnings per share move up and so stock prices. Moreover, foreign subsidiaries may do better than our own economy because they're still early in their upswing in profits. While we're, by some stretches, moving into mature phases in our economy, the corporate sector has not really reawakened until relatively recently, and so this can go on for a number of years. Having given you an optimistic view, what are the risks to stocks? One risk is that this is all a flash in the pan, that projected economic turn up doesn't occur. The market looks at earnings relative to expectations, and it does well when you exceed expectations. And earnings have exceeded expectations for the last two quarters. If, on the other hand, growth were to not move up as I've projected, but to even just stay at the 2% level it's been at for almost 10 years, that would be disappointing to the market and would likely result in a sell-off in stocks unless there was a feeling that 2019 was going to be a gangbuster year. All right, so that's one problem. Risk with stocks. The second one is that stock valuations are high. The projected gain in corporate profits from lower corporate taxes for the S&P 500, which is coming from the recently passed tax policy, has made PE multiples, valuations, lower, but still they are higher than average, significantly higher than average. Classically, when valuations are high, they are more apt to correct. Another potential difficulty has to do with inflation. Inflation has been low. Expectations among most people are for that low inflation to continue. As a matter of fact, I heard a conference call recently with Jeff Gundlach. He's the new bond guru who's been right about everything except about Britain staying in the common market. Everything else has worked, so he's considered now the king of bonds. His point is that you can segregate items into one, services, and two, goods. Services are growing at 3% a year, while inflation is up well under 2%. And the reason that it's under 2% is because of technology and its effect on other goods. Prices for goods are declining, and he doesn't see that changing. That would be the consensus right now, that inflation will continue modest. However, we are now at full employment. If we continue to grow at the robust rate, We're going to have to take people who are out of the labor force and bring them in, if there are those people who are willing to come in. And if not, we're going to see an expansion in the shortages that we are seeing already in certain industries. And when people have choices, labor has choices, they move to higher wage situations, and that causes corporations to have higher costs and to raise their prices. So that could well happen. That could be a surprise factor for those who are anticipating wages staying down. But the one that I'm most concerned about, I've saved for last, and I think it's the biggest purely rational worry. It's higher interest rates. Stocks are still fairly reasonable when compared with its competitor bonds. That's because yields on bonds are so low. Any sharp increase in bond interest rates could have two effects. A shift by some investors out of stocks into the new higher yielding bonds, and higher borrowing costs by corporations who have a lot of debt on their books. The Federal Reserve is scheduled to raise rates, coming from what I would call artificially low rates. They're scheduled to raise rates 3 times this year. The consensus says that that's not even going to happen. No 3 rates. If the economy, on the other hand, is strong or inflation looks like it's picking up, that you could have more than 3 step-ups in rates this year. And if you get materially higher interest rates, 10-year bond, which is at 2.5 now, going well above 3, that could create some momentum and have foreign money leaving the U.S. and the dollar going down, it would not be a favorable development. It could very well put the brakes on stocks. All right, but let's see if we can put this together. The economic outlook looks very favorable. A big, big, notice I said that twice, a big, big plus for stock market performance. Everybody likes rapid growth, at least up to a point. Stocks are high, whoever they needn't pick up now. And the ultimate 20 to 35% meaningful drop in stocks can be put off. I'm saying that it will be a material drop in the market sometime in the next 2 to 3 years. It could be tomorrow, even though fundamentally high stock prices alone may not be enough of a reason for that to happen now. It won't be enough of a reason for that to happen now. It could be 2-3 years from now if the near to intermediate term economic outlook remains strong. That is, if investors' animal spirits don't get out of hand. Animal spirits are to see what we've had from January 1 to now continuing at an enormous pace. All the momentum people will be applauding, but the days of a reversal will be drawing closer. But let me tell you about something else, the part that I need to discuss. The herd of investors believe that this year will be great, and that makes me uncomfortable because I don't like to be in with the herd. I like to be an independent thinker. So that leaves me rationally constructive but uncomfortable. Let me end this part by saying don't look for 2018 to end having the same performance that happened in 2017, especially in the second half of the year. What about us? We like the fact that almost half of our stock money is in international markets. They are behind us in their economic cycle and have strong momentum, as I've discussed. For example, we are at defined full employment of 4%. Europe is at 8%, which means they can go farther along to continue growing, although there are reported by some shortages in international labor, which is kind of a strange thing. Everybody's worried about labor being phased out at the same time as there's a shortage of labor. All right, let's go on to performance. Your account did well last year. The market was up sharply. You kept pace with significantly lower risk. A 65-35 model was up 14% to 16%. There's a lot of there's some variation in that. The biggest reason was the international stock component. Our fund selections and in-house fund did well. Many bond funds did well last year. Value didn't do well last year, but our holdings in growth, biotech, normal technologies did well. Our alpha, a measure of risk-adjusted performance, was strong for the year. You're going to hear more about alpha. What are our plans? Last year, we made significant changes in our investment activities. We added more opportunistic positioning with greater turnover. We added more sector parts. Now, what does sector mean? Sector means taking industries in a cluster and buying them, like the energy sector or the retail sector. We did more in that area. We did also make some adjustments, both in returns and risk management, that I'm very comfortable with. These changes were most apparent in our in-house stock initiative fund, and you received a memo on that turnover. You ask your advisor if you haven't seen it yet. This year, we will continue last year's style, but we are looking at a more cyclical approach. Cyclicals do well when the economy picks up. Commodities in individual stocks and overall commodity price initiatives are going to be emphasized. Other hedge-type vehicles, not hedge fund, hedge, which will reduce those funds that have downside protection, relief, not elimination of, but relief in the declines in markets will be looked at, and we already have some in the portfolio. We're likely to use more ETFs going forward. And as you can hear, we're going to have more use of sector investments. We're getting more sophisticated in our risk control factors. Early this year, as we speak now, I don't know if it's today, tomorrow, or late yesterday, it depends on where you're at in this, but we'll be buying positions in oil service equipment and Pacific-based developing market stocks, adding to our positions in the case of developing market stocks. We'll be looking at alternative investments and managing risks more carefully, as I've already stated. Okay, let's move on to the Trump tax. It's a subject of a separate memo that you will be receiving probably this afternoon, and the tax will add over 1% to growth in 2018. It will put money in many people's pockets. However, New York State is going to be hurt by the non-deductibility of state and local taxes. Efforts are going to be made, as discussed by Governor Cuomo, to circumvent these changes. But I'm not sure, I wouldn't stay up at night thinking that that will work out. It may, but it's a good chance that the administration will not let that happen. The outcome, some high-end people will leave the state. That's not good because they pay a lot in taxes, so that will lower the state's tax base. But here's a plus that maybe you haven't thought about. Technology is growing in our city. Did you know, for example, that there are more people working in technology in New York than in Silicon Valley? Cornell University is building a technology-based program, and that could have the effect of bringing even more people into technology. And New York can use, in addition to financial, which is the most important area, media, and just general professionals as high-end payers. So technology could add that and offset the amount of people that are leaving. Keep in mind that what you've seen in real estate, the flourishing of real estate in the outer boroughs, is just because of excess professionals who can't find themselves in less expensive places to live in New York, even though they're making a good deal of money. We're going to see anyone in technology who, if technology grows, will see those people moving into the boroughs and, in general, regenerating our base. Well, what about real estate? I've mentioned how real estate has grown, but what will happen in that respect in the future? Real estate will be hurt marginally by more limited deductibility of interest expense and property taxes. More important than this deductibility, which is going to get a lot of press, will be that interest rate rises. And if the interest rate rises, you're going to have difficulty in many areas, whether they're business, like office buildings, or whether it would be in selling of homes and apartments. Andrew just came into my office last night and told me that he's seen this visceral feeling that real estate is weakening in New York somewhat on its own. Still, real estate ownership will remain a key component of people's portfolios. So now I'm going to take a quick break and put on as a guest speaker Mayukh Poddar, who's going to talk to you for a few minutes on Bitcoin.
Hi. So I think there has been a lot of interest across the globe about Bitcoin. There has been a lot of enthusiasm. We have seen Bitcoin and other altcoins, digital currencies, move up sharply last year. But at the same time, we have seen Bitcoin drop by close to 25% yesterday. So what does it all mean? First of all, let me start with what is Bitcoin? What is a digital currency? So any currency we think about is kind of a trust-based system. You have to trust the issuer of the currency to back the value of that currency with something. When you and I use US dollars, that's backed by the US Treasury. So then the question is, who is making Bitcoins? Who is creating Bitcoins? And do we trust them? So the way the digital currency like Bitcoin works is anyone can create them. So wouldn't everyone be creating Bitcoins? Well, there is a slight wrinkle in that. The way Bitcoin works is that you can create Bitcoin, but to create it, you have to solve large and difficult computational problems that take up a lot of computational infrastructure, a lot of PCs, servers, and a lot of energy, a lot of power. So that makes it hard to create Bitcoins. The other thing is Bitcoin limits the number of Bitcoins that can be created in any given window of time. So that also limits the number of Bitcoins. But fundamentally, it remains a trust-based system. As long as you trust that digital network of anonymous people creating Bitcoins and keeping a ledger of who owns what within that system, that's a currency that you can use. So I think what gives us pause is really the hyperbolic rise we've seen in the price of Bitcoin and other coins and the associated volatility that we've seen. Is there any fundamental reason why Bitcoin should go up by a few thousand percent in a year? We find it hard to justify that kind of move. So from an investing perspective, when you think about it, the question we ask as investors is it an investment that you can hold in our portfolios? And the logical analysis leads us to the conclusion that it's not really an investment. At this point, it's a very sentiment-driven market where sentiment can drive it up, negative sentiment can drive it down. In some way, it's similar to going into a slot machine in Las Vegas. The question is, what gives you more enjoyment? Investing in Bitcoin, a little bit of money, and seeing it go up, go down, or going to Vegas and taking a bet there? It's a hard thing for us to come and say that this is an investment that belongs in a portfolio. It's very sentiment-driven. There is an element of gambling in there. In various measures, it looks like a bubble, and from an investment perspective, we'd not recommend people investing in that. That said, it's an interesting technology. It allows maintaining books and records in a decentralized way that can actually make or change the way we keep our books and records better over time. But that's a longer-term story. I think I'd like to reiterate that at this point, we don't think that people should be considering it as an investment.
Thank you, Mayuk, and thank you, Lou, for the outlook that you've given us. Now, at this point of the call, we're going to address a few questions that our clients sent in. So to start off with our first question, there are high levels of consumer household debt. Lou, where does that leave us?
Debt is high, but as a percentage of income, it is actually low given the low interest rates and the cutback in debt after the 2008 recession. So that it isn't really a problem now. We will be watching debt going forward, given the fact that people are spending and their savings rate is going down. We'll be paying attention to it going forward.
The second question, how are we positioned for dollar weakness?
We have an unusually large position in foreign markets, and foreign markets would be a dollar-for-dollar beneficiary of a decline in the dollar.
Next question, people are saying we should be putting money in the pockets of spenders to generate income. Where do we see much of that happening?
Middle-income people, as I've mentioned by saying the economy are spending, I mean middle-income people are spending, will benefit from the reduction in taxes. They are likely to boost their spending and help generate growth in revenues, at least for a few years.
Our next question. Governor Jerry Brown moved to bolster California's rainy day fund, and his message centered around a warning, which was, what's out there is darkness, uncertainty, decline, and recession. So good luck. And I believe he ended that with a smile.
I don't see darkness, decline, and recession. Uncertainty, as always, yes. It sounds like the first term Governor Jerry Brown, with being morose, replacing his former moonbeam persona.
Our next question, what is Lou recommending in these strange times for clients who are retired, who are no longer earning wages, and are hoping to make their savings and investments last, and possibly even grow a little bit with the bull market, cannot be depended upon to continue?
A visionary mentality with an attitude that they have been fortified by stock and real estate markets, fortified in what's happened so far, and as a generalization, can afford a temporary decline in the market.
And our next question, what should we hold against the possibility of another 2008 debacle?
If it makes you comfortable, hold 1 year's worth of expenses. If that's not enough, hold 2 years' worth. But I don't see a repeat of 2008 magnitude. That was down 50 to 60. I've said 20 to 35. That's, in a way, less than half or less.
The next question comes from a concerned client. How can we take a chunk of our savings and stack it up to cover us so that at the end of our life, we're not spent in a double-room nursing home?
I know you, Ms. Questionnaire, and your situation, and you don't need to worry about that. And the statement is true for virtually all of our clients. It is worry, not reality, that is the problem for most of you, given our work on your financial affairs.
And our final question for today, in conjunction with the new tax plan, will Lou be discussing anything about charitable contributions, charitable distributions from a pension plan, the required minimum distributions?
You should all listen very carefully to this. This is an opportunity. A required minimum distribution from an IRA that is donated to a charity is, quote, tax deductible. Its quotes are there because it's in the form of you're not paying taxes on the required minimum distribution. That's how you get benefit. Charitable contributions are included as part of the $12,000 per person, $24,000 per couple for the new standard deduction. It is going to be hard to get to the $24,000 per year, given the limit on state, city, and property taxes of $10,000. So what you had in the past was a big deal. Now you're getting squeezed. That leaves $14,000 for mortgage interest, charitable, and medical deductions. So that's going to be hard to get. In sum, for many, the charitable deduction will be partially or fully wasted from a tax standpoint as part of the already given $24,000 standard deduction. If you have a $24,000 standard deduction and you go from $14,000 and then you're giving $5,000 to charity, say, so you're going to have $19,000, but you're getting $24,000, so it isn't helping you. For those in that circumstance, donating the required minimum distribution for your intended charitable contribution puts extra after-tax cash in your pocket. In other words, it's a great idea to use your minimum distribution from a pension plan and donate it to charity. Now, before we end this Lunch with Lou, I want to play snippets of a song that was once popular by the Eagles, a rock and roll Hall of Fame group. It is titled The Long Run, and my snippet starts, "Well, we're scared, but we ain't shaken." So listen carefully. Okay, the song was put in to provide you with a change of pace and for me to have the opportunity to be viewed as a pop-up disc jockey. More seriously, it is to remind you not to get caught up in the euphoria of today's stock market or be unduly concerned about the inevitable correction. Your focus, especially after the way your portfolio has been fortified recently, for even most of our more senior clients, should be on the long run.
Thank you, Lou. And thank you to everyone for listening and for sending us your questions. And of course, if you have more personal questions, please contact one of the members of your wealth management team. Our phone number is 212-406-0850. So once again, thank you for joining us with Lunch with Lou.